Fourth and final hour of 3D on this snowy Tuesday here in Nashville. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick here with you. And as promised, we said we would talk a little bit about the coaching search. We learned a lot yesterday as an hour or so before we hit the airwaves to kick off the week. We had learned that Mike Mularkey and the Tennessee Titans had parted ways. We carried John Robinson's press conference live yesterday at 1 o'clock, and certainly that's what we've been discussing a lot of since the move was made. And we told you we would kind of talk about the list. Now that that's in the past, now we're moving forward with, okay, so who's the next guy? If the next guy is supposed to take the next step, if 9-7 in a divisional playoff round loss and a playoff win wasn't good enough, who's the next guy to lead them to that next level? And to help us with all that, Vinny Iyer from Sporting News. He's been writing on this. He now joins us on the show. Vinny, how you doing?
Good. How's it going, guys?
We're cold. It's a little snowy. We don't deal with snow well in the South, but we're managing.
Yeah, it's not too bad here in Charlotte, so it feels a little bit better.
Yeah, you know a little bit about that, right? A snowstorm coming through there, you know, it can get a little dicey. So let's start with kind of these guys, because right now they're just names. Some of them we remember their playing days, so we can identify there. But realistically, unless you've had any interaction, unless they've ever been in your market and you've had to cover them, it's hard to really know what these guys bring to the table. So when you kind of see the list of names that are being floated out there, you've written on this, what jumps out at you?
Well, I think the theme of this offseason, and we know everybody copies each other in this league, and last offseason, who are the big hits here, really, Sean McVay from Wire to Wire for the Rams, and at the end, there's Kyle Shanahan with the 49ers and their upside for next year. So everyone's looking at, we want a coordinator like that, we want a young mind like that, and you saw that immediately with the Bears going after Matt Nagy. The Colts look in line to have Josh McDaniels, and a little older guy, but Pat Shurmur looks like he's going to be the Giants coach. So it looks that's the way the league goes at some point. If you've got the older, hard-nosed, defensive-minded coach, everyone switches to a different offensive coach. In this case, they did have an offensive-minded coach, but I think everyone's looking for the upside. They want that offense that's complete and explosive and can do a whole bunch of different things, and that's why I think it's good in a way that teams are going more for the ceiling and not settling for the floor offensively.
Yeah, what's interesting to me, Vinny, is we get caught up in, I know Sean McVay is the easiest one to use. He's young. You know, first you hear the Rams, 31 years old. Are you kidding me? Oh, my goodness. It looked so bad last year to what it did this year. I mean, what a quick turnaround. And I realize he's been the example, but it kind of cracks me up that we think now everybody should go hire the young whippersnapper. Well, how'd they fare in the playoffs? You know, they were at home and they lost to the veteran team. And we're sitting here talking about a Jacksonville team. Doug Marrone is not a young whippersnapper. He's an old school guy with Tom Coughlin up in the ivory tower. And he's about, you know, doing things kind of the old school way. So you don't really see, as we sit here in the Final Four, about young whippersnappers. Bill Belichick is not some up-and-comer. I mean, so it is tricky to see what is the best approach. Is it the, you know, is it the Kyle Shanahan's, the Sean McVay's, or is it the more seasoned guy?
I think it's all about knowing what kind of team you have. And I think with the Rams, they had a young team, so going with a younger coach made sense. They needed some guys to lift up on defense, so they kind of balanced that out with an older Wiley coordinator there with Wade Phillips that kind of brought everything together there. So it's really knowing about what kind of team you have, how close you are, who can push the right buttons, who fits the skill set of what you already have, because a lot of teams try to change everything and scheme and all that. But the teams that seem to do successful say, hey, we've got all these pieces together. This is someone who can put them together a little better. So it's a very tough thing, and that's why a lot of teams fail at it, and you see the turnover 2 or 3 years, because you got to know your team well first before you can know the coach that's going to make you the most successful.
You said you're there in Charlotte. One of the names on the list is their defensive coordinator for the Panthers and Steve Wilks. What can you tell us about him?
Well, I think the one thing I'll tell you first off is the players love him. You see the motivation and how they've come out, and everyone is worried about how are they going to respond without Sean McDermott, who went to coach the Bills. Then here you have Steve Wilks maybe bringing a little bit more energy, the level of play was restored to what we had 2 years ago here. So I think people just respond to those type of coaches that have a lot of the motivational tools there. And I think they're pretty impressed with how he just took over and seamless and not a drop off there. And we look at the copycat, but you also look at pedigree and a particular position that leads to good coaches being hired elsewhere. And I think you look Wilkes following McDermott, I think you're going to get a similar mindset. And we know McDermott had pretty good immediate success.
One thing that's always tricky to me, and obviously it's not my job to figure out, it's up to the organization and the general manager who's doing the hiring to figure it out. A tricky situation for me, Vinny, is knowing if you have, let's say, for example, a Ron Rivera in Carolina. He's a defensive-minded guy. And you've got Steve Wilkes. And I always wonder, you know, okay, so how much of it does the head coach have his fingers all over, you know, whatever side of the ball? If the head coach is from one side of the ball, how much does he play into the coordinator's role? How much is he really, really involved? And so you don't really know how much does the coordinator get credit, or is it really the head coach that has his hands all over? How do you deal with that, which when you're trying to figure out a good candidate?
Well, I think you can maybe look at the coach as more the architect of everything they want to do, and you got two guys as the contractors that your coordinators are that are kind of installing that, and they're going to have meetings and discuss that. But I think the biggest thing is you have the mesh in philosophies. You can't have a guy that wants to play ball control, and then you have a coordinator that is going to open it up and throw it around the building. So it's all about the chemistry and balance and having a base to work with, and then saying, okay, you go to work and color it in. We've drawn the picture. You color it what you need to do with the players that we've given you. So I think it's a very difficult thing to do. And I think sometimes, like I mentioned with the McVay-Phillips thing, sometimes it's a yin and yang situation where you have one guy that's older, one guy that's younger, but they come together nicely for you in terms of how you're calling plays.
The two guys in Philadelphia, obviously we know Frank Reich from his playing days, but you got a quarterback's coach and an OC. What can you tell us about them?
Yeah, I think both of these guys are fine candidates because I know Doug Peterson still pretty much has his hands all over the offense, the play calling and all that. But you look at the development of a quarterback and what they've done there with Carson Wentz, both of those guys, DeFilippo, the quarterback's coach, and Reich have really had a good influence on what you're going with Carson Wentz. And you see a lot of things you like. And we know it's a little bit copycat in that sense as well. It's like, what can he do for our quarterback if he's going to do something for a quarterback like our quarterback? And I look at Carson Wentz, and a lot of things he can do is mobility and throwing it around and kind of being able to spread it around the field. A lot of that quality is in Marcus Mariota. So you got to kind of look at that. You got to follow the parallels and kind of connect the dots to how you want your team to operate with your quarterback.
Vinny, let's ask about what's happening right now with a couple other guys that have been reportedly offered interviews with the Titans. Give us your rundown on Mike Vrabel. What do you think of him?
I really like him. I know they didn't have the best defense down in Houston, but there are a lot of reasons for that when you don't have J.J. Watt and Whitney Merciless and a lot of age there that crept up in the secondary. But with Mike Vrabel, I just think, again, as a former player, and you got to know that he's had the highest success here with the Patriots. He's got good guys in his coaching tree as a player and as an assistant all throughout the way that there's something there. We've seen him in college as well. Ohio State, his alma mater, do some things. So it seems like everywhere he goes, there's just a buzz and energy of success that follows him. So I think you have to look at that. And sometimes you can't worry too much about, okay, we need an offensive coach. That's what coordinators for always in every situation to balance it out. So with Vrabel, the players, again, love him and the energy. And he's a younger guy, but he's developed so much experience here of late where he can operate an entire team at this point.
And what about a guy that maybe people don't know as well? Because people who have watched football for a while, you probably could remember Mike Vrabel playing in a lot of big games. But what about Matt LaFleur, the Rams offensive coordinator, who apparently also is going to get an interview here?
Yeah, this is a guy that kind of was flown under the radar, but I think he really was not that anymore when we went with Sean McVay there. You look at his work I mean, Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay, if you want to go total copycat, there's a guy that's worked under both of those guys. He turned Matt Ryan into an MVP. He turned Jared Goff completely around. So when you look at that again, we're such quarterback-driven in this league, and you look at Mariota and what he could do there. And I think Mariota is just an intriguing kind of player that you can work with as a quarterback's coach because you can do so much with him. You can run him around. You can have him throw deep. You can do so many things you can't do with other limited quarterbacks. So I think you have to think about Mariota in this one. He's already had a couple different guys in there, and Ken Whisenhunt and Mike Mularkey. You need some guy that's younger and can have some stability and develop him and stay with him so they're there for a long time. And we know those coach-quarterback combinations work like that. So LaFleur, this is a good time to get him because I don't think he's going to be available in a couple years.
Vinny, we've now tossed out, you've given us a great description of and background of a lot of these guys out there. Is there any guy that you lean towards right now from where you sit that in your mind is the best fit or from what you've heard might have the inside track?
Well, I really think LaFleur has to be a name to watch here. I thought he would definitely pop up. He knew that they were going for someone in this direction. I think maybe you had Mike Mularkey kind of feel that as well, that they were going for one of these bigger offensive names. And when you look at all the dominoes falling the way they have with Nagy and McDaniels and Shermer, the next guy on the list to me was Matt LaFleur in that vein. So I know the Eagles guys are good, but it's hard to determine who do you feel a little bit more comfortable about versus Reich and DeFilippo. But I think you look at LaFleur, the pedigree's there, and it lines up well with what the Titans really want out of their offense.
As an X factor right now, not that it would affect this job, but it might be just something that you would see a lot of ripples around the league. Do you think there's any chance that Mike Tomlin is on shaky ground in Pittsburgh in the aftermath of their season?
Well, I think he's particularly safe, but you might have to do the old sacrificing of coordinators at some point, maybe not right away, but they're going to have to take a long look at Todd Haley and Keith Butler. Are these the guys that are going to take them to the next level? I know Haley and Butler have had a pretty good run here as they've redeveloped talent there, but I can't see Tomlin becoming available anytime soon. I think when you have that Super Bowl victory, it gives you a really long free pass. I think that's happened with Mike McCarthy too, and McCarthy finally succumbed and made his change as a coordinator. I think that's what you could see more out of the Steelers.
Who do you think is going to end up in Arizona?
This one's a tough one because I think they're kind of a jilted right now with all the things that have gone on. But I would still maybe look at Steve Wilks being a strong candidate there just the way things could go. I thought they might look more in-house with who they had there with Errol Godwin and James Betcher, the defense coordinator. But they still could go that route. But right now, the outside guys, Wilks would be the best.
It is pretty interesting that we're not really talking about, well, I guess there's been a couple retreads. I guess McDaniels, that qualifies as a retread. Gruden is a retread. But for overall, we're talking about a lot of guys with their first crack at being a head coach, where a lot of times, I mean, we just saw the exit of Mike Mularkey. That was his third stint as a head coach. I mean, so many times we're talking about guys that have had two or three cracks, two or three bites of the head coaching apple.
Yeah, it's definitely a different trend here. And I mean, some of these established guys are hard to get right now, and it's hard to go after like a John Fox, Jim Caldwell, especially with the bad taste of how their teams kind of finished the season. So, it's very hard because you're trying to please a lot of parties, and number one, the players inside the building, and then the fans are going to overreact either way and think they know everything about the decision there. So I think you can't really force and affect your decisions based on the outside noise. But unfortunately, sometimes it's hard to ignore that, and that's why you see all these teams making these drastic changes.
Last thing real quick, Jim Bob Cooter. Saw him at UT when he played in college. You know, there was a lot of stuff about him when he was in Detroit. He's kind of just out there sitting. Where does he land? What's next for him?
Yeah, I'm just really surprised that he's not gotten as much buzz. I think part of it is that he's extremely young and didn't stop Sean McVay, but he had a little bit of the coaching name to his presence and the John Gruden stuff behind him to help him there, maybe get the job a little earlier. But, yeah, I think maybe the question is the youth. Is he ready to make that jump there at 33? I think he will be a head coach at some point. I think if I'm the Lions, I'm looking very seriously at keeping him. So I think they're going to do everything they can to keep him with Matt Patricia, because here's a guy that has Matthew Stafford right. I don't think you want to change things up there. But I think he's a dark horse candidate for any of the two jobs that are remaining. But down the line, I think two or three years at the most, you'll see Jim Bob Cooter in a head coaching role.
Good stuff. Really appreciate it. Thanks for lending some insight onto to where this is headed, and we'll talk to you down the road.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate it.
Vinny Iyer, Sporting News, NFL writer for them. Appreciate him joining us and his article, Titans' five best coaching candidates to replace Mike Mularkey, and you just heard us discuss them. Go check out his work at Sporting News. We'll come back with more of 3D next on 102.5 The Game. What do we think the time frame or timetable for John Robinson is for this hire? I know yesterday he didn't say, you know, it's just about getting the right guy. He said he made that abundantly clear in the press conference. And, you know, that's should be the objective of any hire, right? Make the right hire. College is a little bit different when you have recruiting, but at the pro level, it's about getting it right. But at what point is it like, okay, it's time to announce the next head coach? How long is that window, in your opinion?
What would be the hurry? I guess would be my first question without knowing 100%. I'm sure there's plenty that can be done.
Staff. That's the hurry. Staff.
So who
– remember, Mike Munchak was put behind the eight ball by Jeff Fisher, the whole thing, how it unfolded, the time frame.
Yes.
Mike Munchak, as we know, he did not assemble a great staff. And a lot of it was out of his control. I mean, it was awful, awful timing. A lot of good candidates had already been hired elsewhere. So really it's about assembling your staff when you ask the question, what's the hurry? Well, the hurry is there's going to be other guys assembling staffs too, and a lot of people are going to be going after the same guys.
All right, so let's just take the Colts. They seem to have their guy, Josh McDaniels. But let's say the Patriots get to the Super Bowl. That's 3 weeks before he can get in there. So they don't seem to be worried about that. Right? Anybody who has basically named this guy.
If he knows he's going to be the next guy, which he does, you don't think Josh McDaniels is not making calls while getting paid by the Patriots right now to game plan and get ready for Jacksonville?
Okay, but that's the only reason why it would take that long.
I mean, he is still assembling the staff.
Okay, but I guess my point is that's still gonna take them for 3 weeks. Otherwise, you probably would be able to make your hire quite a bit before that if you're working from a pool of coaches that aren't coaching right now, right? You should be able to get him in, and he can start that process.
But you've already
the only reason it would take that long is it's a guy that's still coaching, right?
Well, no, not necessarily. I mean, you know, a case like yesterday is a staff just opened up as of yesterday. There's a lot more guys out on the street. So things happen. But you already had Matt Nagy being named in Chicago. You had John Gruden in Oakland. Those guys are already in place. So guess what they're doing? They're plucking people right now. They are assembling a staff. The other guys, like Matt Patricia, it's just kind of a foregone conclusion. Enough people have figured out, they've talked to enough people, he's going to be the next Lions coach, but that's not official. Doesn't mean that Matt Patricia's not assembling a staff behind the scenes. So to me, it's about getting your guy in place and letting him be able to pluck the best candidates possible. Because it's important.
But
let's
not
be
as
honest,
important.
You got to have a good staff.
But not as important as finding the right head coach. There's no reason to hurry and get the wrong guy. True?
Well, yes.
I think you're confident that the right guy knows enough people that you could find a good staff. But it is important to match up. As we said, there's a lot of moving parts. You want to match up. For example, and I don't know if, you know, the 3-4 defense, I would think you would want to keep a guy that runs the 3-4 if it's not going to be Dick LeBeau. Now, you have the existing staff. You might keep a few guys.
They were doing 4-3 before. I mean, a lot of these guys have been in both systems. I mean, we already know Jarrell Casey, Derek Morgan, those guys, they can play both.
Jarrell Casey, yes. Derek Morgan, yes.
Yes.
But there are some guys like Arakpo and the linebackers that have been essentially 3-4 guys, right? I mean, for the last – before Mike Mularkey took over.
Avery Williamson did both, did he not?
I don't think so.
No?
He came in as an inside linebacker in the 3-4. Doesn't mean he couldn't do it, but that's – I would think something you would consider.
I don't think the type
of defensive back that you have would play into it also.
I don't think you have to have a system one way or the other. First of all, the way today's – I mean – What do the Patriots play?
Well, you have a hybrid, right?
Right, they do both.
Yeah.
I mean, works for them.
But this has been pretty specific here in Tennessee, is they have played the 3-4. They have played the Dick LeBeau system.
Well, which is funny because really all we've ever known the entire time they've been here is a 4-3.
Yeah, but that's going back a ways. Like 3 years. Because remember, LeBeau was there. He was not officially the coordinator, but he was co. He's had at least 3 full seasons, right?
Yep.
Or has he been there 4? Didn't LeBeau come in?
3.
Did he come in with
Wiz? Or
was he there? Did Mike Munchak bring in Dick LeBeau?
Didn't he come in with Wiz, co defensive coordinator?
That feels right. With Ray Horton.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's been a while since they have not played the 3-4. It's been a while. Jerry Gray was the guy before. He was with Munch, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. That was 4-3.
That was 4-3. So that's the last time they really had that. That's quite a long time in NFL sense, the way rosters turn over. Because you're trying to draft a certain kind of player, right? These are all just things to think about. It's going to be hard.
I'm just saying there's a lot of these teams, right, that have already made their moves, and they've been doing things behind the scenes for weeks. Now, maybe, you know, the story's been out there for weeks, so maybe John Robinson has been doing a lot of things behind the scenes for weeks, if this
maybe
was
so.
Kind of a foregone conclusion.
But this is the risk you run. This is what you weigh. What gives you a better outlook? Changing and, you know, taking these – risks and chances, or keeping everybody the same, but knowing the flaws or what you conceive to be what you perceive to be flaws in your existing staff.
I guess we'll see, you know, what is the right time frame. I believe it'll be sooner rather than later, even though I know it's about getting the right person, but to me, you got to move.
Well, I think ideally they would. They're not wasting time. They're not going to take a week off.
Wouldn't you say by this time next week we know the next head coach?
I think probably.
Right?
Either that or it's a guy that is pinpointed on somebody's staff right now. They say, you know, kind of like it's been reported with McDaniels and Shurmur. He is going to be the next coach, and Matt Patricia would be in that category too.
Anything change with you from yesterday to today with things that we discussed all day yesterday? Now, you know, you get a little – because this hit – we get hit with this right before the show.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And then we do the show, and then you get time to reflect, let some things digest, and think about it a little bit more. I mean, really didn't have time to think. You just jump in there and you do it. Did anything change from yesterday to today?
No, I think what I've spent some time thinking about is – and I've had some people ask me about it, is just how it went down. You know, just the statements from Amy Adams Strunk, what happened. I think the end result, it's a tough call, and they're moving forward. They did it. They're changing the coach. I don't think there's this huge outrage of it's a bad decision. But it's a risky decision, right? But what's intriguing to me, and this is what I have – what. I don't know if it makes sense. It would be interesting to me. I don't know how many people would like to see somebody dig and really find out what was going on behind the scenes for the last couple of weeks, because I think that's the intriguing part of the soap opera, is you had a coach who you had these reports out there the week of the Jacksonville game. If he loses, he's out. They win. Hey, going into the playoffs, you made the playoffs, but still, he loses, he's out. They win the playoff game. The first thing he says after the great victory, hey, I don't know if I'm back. I didn't get any kind of reassurances. All of that is intriguing to me in a soap opera. And I think, honestly, if this were, pick a team, the Cowboys, can you imagine the drama with all of the reporters that are in a city like that and covering that team, a Skip Bayless kind of guy? Can you imagine? You could write a book on that sometimes. But here, it's kind of like, well, all right, this is what you did, move on. But does that make sense? I mean, mm-hmm. But I would be interested in hearing what was going on. Did Amy Adams Strunk say, he's coming back, I want Mike Mularkey back? Was John Robinson saying, I don't know, we need to keep our options open here? What was happening there? What role did anybody else play in the front office?
We're not going to get that from her.
Why did they come out with a statement?
The moving forward statement?
And why feel the need to throw out a statement that said, hey, we talked about a contract extension with Mike Mularkey? Why would you say that? That doesn't – does John Robinson – like the fact that that was out there? That he's in a position where he's got to say, yeah, we talked about a contract extension, but yet he's not my coach.
What I think is interesting is he brought up yesterday in the press conference that Mike Mularkey's comments from the day prior factored in. And one of them was about Marcus Mariota's progression. He felt like Mariota was, you know, nobody bought what Mike Mularkey said about Marcus Mariota. His staunch support of Terry Rubisky, okay. But then John Robinson came out yesterday and told us that the decision was made yesterday morning. Is anybody buying that? Sign me up for no. I'm not buying that this thing happened yesterday morning. Okay. You think he woke up yesterday morning and said, oh, you know what? You know, after further review, Mike Mularkey's out. Give me a break. I'm not buying that.
Is it possible that
– so he tells us yesterday that this was made yesterday morning. Well, guess what? If you have problems with stuff that Mike Mularkey put out, John Robinson, I don't buy that you woke up yesterday morning and you decided it was time to part ways.
Okay, so that would tell
me – excuse me for not believing that.
And see, this is why I would love to know with some investigative journalism what happened, but that would tell me that – Amy Adams Strunk had to be on board. Maybe she wasn't on board until yesterday morning, where Mike Mularkey said, I'm not changing. I'm keeping everything the same. John Robinson says, well, if we keep him, he's got to make some changes. He doesn't want to make changes. Maybe that's when Amy Adams Strunk said, okay, I love Mike Mularkey, but you win. We have to move in another direction.
Okay.
These pieces aren't going to fit together.
That's fair.
Is that plausible?
That's not him, though. That's not him. His decision has been made up for a while.
Yeah, I think he has had his reservations.
The scenario you
for
painted is very plausible, yes.
And she has a say. She's the owner.
Yes, of course. We learned that yesterday.
Yeah.
But he said that he will have a strong – he said strong twice. Strong. Or very strong. Strong say in the next head coach, right? I mean, he made a point. She's the owner, of course.
Right, and if she's smart, she's going to, you know, she will listen in and probably want to be comfortable with the next head coach as a person or whatever, but she's not a talent evaluator. She's not a coach evaluator. So
well,
she's,
but she's
going
been
to
in
defer
all these
to John
meetings
Robinson.
Before.
Right.
She was in the meetings the last go-around.
Sure, and she
was in
be.
The GM meetings.
She should be. But at the same time, I think at the end of the day, you have to say, I've hired John Robinson to find the coach.
Why should she be in there?
I just think if she wants to be, she doesn't have to be. I think some owners would
well,
say,
I'm just
you,
asking,
you go hire the coach.
She should, right. But I mean.
She should be if she wants to be because
okay.
She's the owner.
Yeah. But I mean, realistically,
maybe
is she going
to
have input?
Maybe she just wants to feel comfortable
okay.
That the guy's not a jerk.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what she finds to be important or not. Some people think you have to be more than a coach these days. You have to be an ambassador. Are you willing to get out in the community? Hey, we got a fan base problem. If she, you know, that's one thing I would want to know is, Are you willing to get out there and do some things in the community? Because we need to reconnect with our fans. That might be something I'd be asking in an interview. It's secondary to, is this the right guy for our team to win? Because that's the first priority. But I'm just throwing stuff out there. If I were in those meetings and not a football person, I think it's reasonable to, during an interview process where you have a chance to get to know the person a little bit, ask stuff like that.
Jason Wolf tweeted out just a few minutes ago, Dick LeBeau, who's 80, likely would be comfortable retiring if not asked to return to the Titans next season. But said he will take a wait-and-see approach, according to a source.
That's intriguing. I think he probably wouldn't mind coming back if they just say, you're my defensive coordinator. He might come back.
You know that would be difficult for the next guy. If it came from the top, kind of like
– no, not coming from the top. I'm saying if the new head coach comes in, maybe he's an offensive guy. Like you said, the staff is – it's hard to go find a full new defensive staff, and you can just kind of keep your defensive staff in there. I've seen people do that, right?
It is – you know, it's kind of like Jahmyr Yager. Right, you think like they can play forever, but at some point, in Dick LeBeau, there's no signs of anything. But you still have to factor in, he's 80. So at what point is it
time to
too
move
much?
On.
Well, it's just too much.
Right,
Jahmyr Yager. When you watch him now, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. The game has now it's past him. It's too fast for him. He looks extremely slow. Finally, he looks human. Like I said, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, but he just doesn't fit in to today's game as he sits here at, what, 46 years old
Dick
or whatever
LeBeau,
he is.
He's reached a stage of his career that it's a year-to-year thing with him. It has to be. Just like Marv Levy at the end of his career, pick anybody. Yager is a good example in hockey where – and it's going to happen with Brady.
I was going to say
which
Tom
is why,
Brady, yes.
Which is why it was an issue is what to do with Garoppolo, because at some point – Tom Brady is going to start playing and be too old. It's going to happen someday. It might not be till he's 50, but you have to sort of approach and say, I'm not sure how much longer he can play at this level that you can expect him to play at this level. You have to have a plan. So I would think it's more likely that a new coach would come in and want to have a defensive coordinator that he knows is going to be with him if he signs a 4 or 5 year contract, which would be standard, that he could bring a defensive coordinator that he knows – is going to be around that long.
By the way, remember the incident, national championship game on the sidelines? Is it Mekhi Brown? Remember he?
Yeah, I don't know how you pronounce his first name.
He had the incident with the Georgia player. Then he had the incident with one of his coaches. And remember we talked about it, and I was like, man, look, little Nicky doesn't tolerate that stuff. Everybody was surprised that he even went back in the game.
Right.
He's transferring. He has transferred.
Yes.
He is on the campus at TSU. In fact, he was supposed to be enrolled in classes today. I don't even know if they had classes because of the weather. But he is supposed to have been enrolled at TSU today in class.
And it's ironic
so
that
they left Alabama.
They had an incident where a player assaulted a coach during the season last year.
That is true.
But Tennessee State has – and this they are not alone in programs at that level where they give people second chances. It's part of their – it's part of their philosophy. They feel confident that sometimes a kid with a second chance can be a productive player for them and hopefully go on to good things. They've made no secret about that, right?
Yeah. When we come back, we lost a legend over the weekend, Keith Jackson. Man, college football fans especially, you remember him. A cool little video that you're going to hear next, just chronicling his career. Pretty unbelievable career that he carved out. You'll hear that next on 3D ESPN 102. Back here on 3D ESPN 102.5, The Game. Darren McFarland and Willie Donick with you. Willie, we recently just lost a legend in the broadcasting world in Dick Enberg. And it wasn't too long after that, the news came down this past weekend that we had lost Keith Jackson. It was just horrible, horrible news. When you think about those two guys and what they have meant to sports broadcasting, to lose them in a matter of weeks. It was just, I mean, it saddened me on both fronts, but to hear the news shortly after learning about Dick Enberg and us talking about that, we find out Keith Jackson. And, man, when you think about Keith Jackson, certainly college football and pro football comes to mind.
One of a kind is the first thing that comes to mind when I think of Keith Jackson. Nobody could ever imitate – well, a lot of people have imitated him for fun, right? But you could never broadcast and be like him with his style. And it just shows you that every broadcaster comes from a different place. He's got a real unique background. When something like this happens, and it's sad, but when people reflect, you read some really interesting pieces on people like him, and he is really something. Keith Jackson is one of those announcers, and, of course, they're all getting up there in age, and so it's so sad when we lose somebody like that. But for those of us, you're an eye's age, Darren, if you're in your 40s or even your 30s, you grew up with certain big-time announcers who did a lot of different sports. They didn't just do one sport. He's most known for college football.
Right.
But he did a lot of big things. He did a lot of big baseball games, did World Series games, did the Olympics.
He did it all.
He did it all, and he did it well. And it's hard for us to really get to know announcers like that today because it's more fragmented, there's more channels, there's more games, so there's more announcers. But Dick Enberg and Keith Jackson and Bob Costas and Al Michaels, those are rare guys. And so you feel like you know them, right? So it was a tough thing to lose Keith Jackson, but what an unbelievable mark he made on the sports world and to all of us who grew up loving sports.
I believe his last college football game was quite the memorable one. I believe it was the Rose Bowl with Vince Young in Texas going up against Matt Leinart and the USC Trojans. I think that was the last college football game that he did. And, wow, talking about going out with a bang. We're going to go out today's show with a bang. Here's some memories of the great Keith Jackson.
Mark Spitz has 7 gold medals. He's won everything that he had hoped to win.
Keith Jackson once said the best way to learn about a culture was through its language. Maybe the best way for anyone to learn about American sports would be to study Keith Jackson.
This is a basic credo of Paul Bryant. If you believe in yourself and have dedication and pride and never quit, you'll be a winner.
We've got a problem. That is Schrader into the pack. Kent goes out with him. Allison wins the race. What an incredible finish.
Reggie Jackson.
Long drive right field. It is.
Goodbye.
Before all that, before becoming the voice of college football, before covering 10 Olympics, before the 4 World Series he called, Keith Jackson was believed to have been the first American play-by-play man to call a sporting event in the former Soviet Union.
And the red clad horseman from Leningrad are hot after the Washington Huskies, but Washington has won this race.
To get a job when I got out of college, I had to go to news, but I wanted to be a sports announcer. And you're not going to be one if you don't go out and do whatever it is you've been assigned to do.
The sports director of KOMO-TV here in Seattle, Keith Jackson.
Jim, we'll be talking with these contestants just seconds after they hit the target area, and championship this year rides on split seconds and inches.
By the mid-1960s, Jackson was firmly established at ABC Sports, where his natural curiosity led him to some of the more esoteric competition on Wide World of Sports.
Well, let's see what we can see. Perfect. Absolutely perfect. And Coach wins it. Rob Coates holding on and finally snapped it over, and he defeats Homer Keanu.
And to the more mainstream events, including the very first season of Monday Night Football in 1970.
Crisp, knowledgeable, authoritative, a veteran at his trade, Keith Jackson. And Keith, I take it you'll be pointing up some of the rookies who'll be performing here tonight.
Well, Howard, we sure have a lot of them in professional football this year.
And oh, we've got a nice Seba! It's on the wall, he goes into a terrible flip, and we have a fire!
Hit high in the air to left field, going to the corner, Yastrzemski. It's over the wall, it's a home run for Bucky Dent!
He's virtually helpless, he's down. It is over!
This is a game that reaches.
But Keith Jackson's signature sport, of course, was college football. And over the course of more than four decades, he became as much a part of the sport's fabric as marching bands, dotting the I, gig 'em, hook 'em, and hunkering down.
College football game as such doesn't exhibit the skills that pro football does, but it's got spirit.
This is 52 yards into the breeze. Not strong, but there's some. The kick is up.
Long enough.
It's long enough, and it's good! He made it!
This could be for a national championship. It's up! Missed it to the right! One man! Goodbye! Hello, Heisman!
Goldman!
Stewart with time. Lets it go. He's got three people down there. The ball's up in the air. Caught! Touchdown! Caught by Westbrook for a touchdown! Incredible! He's going for the corner. He's got it. Vince Young scores.
But what separated Keith Jackson from every other broadcaster were his unique turns of phrase.
As it is called, the Cinderella story. Well, we've had all the romance. Now let's find out if she can dance. This is The Weekend with Whiskers.
And a big ugly from the pits of anonymity.
Galloway, touchdown Buckeyes. Whoa, Nelly.
Well, Andy Sedaris, who's our director, got pictures of everything, including a blue tick hound chasing a rabbit.
The last time Brian Creasy ran that far, his dad was chasing him with a stick.
How do you characterize it? I suppose if your roots are Southern, you can call it three whoopies and a hot damn.
I lived all my professional career with a single thought when I went to do a program. Amplify, clarify, and don't intrude. And that was my philosophy, and I never changed it.
Good stuff there. Nice little video tribute for Keith Jackson. We lost a legend for sure. That's going to do it for our Snowy Tuesday show here at Bridgestone Arena. Don't forget Predators and Golden Knights here tonight. They'll drop the puck at 7 o'clock. Free small popcorn and a drink if you're going to be in the house here tonight. I'll have pregame for you at 6 o'clock right here on 102.5 The Game. Have a great rest of your day. Be safe out there. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Jared and the GM, that's next.